This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Genesis, chapters 39 through 41.
Let me begin tonight with a quote. Never think that you could do something in life if only you had a different circumstances assigned to you. What we call hindrances, obstacles, disappointments are probably God's opportunities. Nowhere is that statement better illustrated than in the life of Joseph. His journey through life gets splattered with what appears to be disaster after disaster, but God's providence and Joseph's piety combine to turn each of these tragedies into a stepping stone. His life teaches us not to get down over disappointments. Joseph's topsy-turvy circumstances are proof of the truth that Paul will teach us later in Romans chapter 8 when he says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose." As we mentioned last week, Joseph's journey is marked by four P words. He goes from a pit to Potiphar's house, to the prison, and eventually to the palace. Here's a quote that describes Joseph. "In duty, he was loyal. In temptation, he was strong. And in prison, he was faithful." And that's what we'll see tonight. Chapter 39 begins. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Now you remember the story began when Joseph was thrown into the pit by his brothers. They were jealous of the favoritism that had been shown him by his father, and they took it out on Joseph. They sold him to the slave traders that were headed down to Egypt, and then they dipped his fancy jacket into goat's blood to make their dad Jacob believe that he had been eaten by wild beasts. Now he's in Egypt, and imagine a 17-year-old, a young man, this Joseph, standing on the auction block in some slave market in Egypt. He's never been very far away from his father's tents. Now he's in a seedy section of this Egyptian capital. He's being pawed over. He's been treated as a piece of livestock. He's a slave on the block. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. One man steps out of the crowd and decides to pay the price. Now, this name Potiphar means devoted to the sun. And no doubt he was connected to Egyptian idolatry. The word officer can also mean eunuch. A eunuch was a male who had been castrated. In most Oriental kings, they insisted that their highest officers be eunuchs. That assured that no hanky-panky would go on with members of the royal harem. And it's possible that Potiphar became a eunuch to get ahead in his career and to move up the ladder there in the Egyptian court. We're also told that he was the captain of the guard. And that could be translated chief of police. Potiphar was probably the chief officer of Pharaoh's secret service. Now you put all that together and here's the picture. Joseph goes to work for an idol-worshipping Egyptian who holds this high-ranking office in the government and who's totally sold out to climb the corporate ladder. Verse 2 tells us, "The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand." Now notice the secret of Joseph's success. The Lord was with him. Even though he had been rejected by his own brothers, treated cruelly, uprooted from his home, sold in a slave market, Joseph refused to cop an attitude. I find that amazing. You know, he could have sulked. He could have started complaining. He could have become bitter over his plight, but he didn't. He accepted his circumstances, and he trusted in God. He saw himself as a victor rather than a victim. Guys, how are you dealing with the hand that you've been dealt? How are you handling the difficult circumstances you face tonight? Are you like Joseph? Well, verse 4 tells us, "So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. He got promoted. Potiphar promoted Joseph, made him manager of all of his personal affairs. And so it was from that time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. And so he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. In other words, he trusted Joseph completely. Just turned it all over to him. Trusted in this Hebrew slave. Verse 6, and Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Little Joe was wise beyond his years. He was blessed by God. He walked with God, and he was also a hunk. I mean, Joseph was a pretty boy. Imagine in your mind sort of a Jewish Tom Cruise. Maybe a Jewish Leonardo DiCaprio or something. And his good looks caught the eye of Mrs. Potiphar. For it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. Potipharina makes a pass at Joseph. She propositions him with sex. Now remember, verse 1 tells us that Potiphar was an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. And we discussed the possibility that Potiphar was a eunuch. But here's the question. Why would a eunuch ever bother to get married? And why would a woman ever marry a eunuch? That leads me to believe that Potiphar chose to become a eunuch after he had gotten married. Now, I can't prove that. It's just a suspicion. But it's possible that Potiphar sold out his virility, you might say, for a higher position in Pharaoh's court. In other words, he put his career ahead of his wife. He put climbing the corporate ladder ahead of meeting his wife's needs. And guys, that is always a mistake. When you stop caring for your wife, when you stop seeking to meet her needs, she is tempted to go elsewhere. Don't become an emotional eunuch in your wife's life. Potiphar's ambitions had slighted his wife. She's now unhappy. She's unsatisfied. And now this Leonardo DiCaprio has taken over as the man of the house. You can see the trouble is coming. But notice Joseph's response to her pass, verse 8. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You know, today we live in a world of rationalizations. Listen to how we've defined our terms today. It's no longer called adultery. It's called an affair. Marriages are now open. Divorces are creative. Adulterers are called significant others. J. Allen Peterson describes how we've glamorized adultery. He says, affair? What a nice sounding, almost inviting word, wrapped in mystery, fascination, and excitement. A relationship, not a sin. One psychologist has coined the term. He calls it healthy adultery. There are a million bleeding, hurting hearts who will testify to you that there is nothing healthy about it. Listen to a victim of adultery. She writes a letter to Ann Landers. She says, my husband and I have been married for 30 years. I was a virgin bride and have been a faithful wife. A young woman, our daughter's age, came on to him and he took her to bed. He was so guilt-ridden and miserable that he told me about it the next day. I forgave him, did not mention it to a soul, and he never saw her again. He believes no harm was done. She thinks no harm was done, but she destroyed me. I'm unable to grow old gracefully. I cry for hours when I'm alone. You see, a bond between two souls gets violently torn apart through adultery. trust between a husband and his wife gets shattered. The secrecy and the privacy of their relationship becomes violated. The bed becomes invaded. Trust me, there is injury. There is hurt. There is harm. Adultery does that. This woman's heartbreak is tragic. But adultery, understand, is a sin not just against your spouse. Notice what Joseph said. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against who? Against God. Your marital vows are not just vows between you and your mate. Your marital vows are between you and God. You see, sex carries heavy spiritual overtones. It's sacred because it speaks of God's relationship with His people. And adultery mars God's masterpiece. Sexual sin is a sin against both man and God. And Joseph refused. Here this woman is. She comes on to him. She sees him in charge of all of the house. And so she says, why don't we just go all the way and play house together? And Joseph says, no. But Mrs. Potiphar refuses to take no for an answer. In verse 10, she starts to apply the full court press. Notice, so it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day. This gal was persistent. You see, to her, Joseph was a challenge. You know, how can I get his attention? How can I woo him to bed? Who knows what all she did to try to seduce him, to try to entice him? All we know is that day after day after day, she threw out her bait and she tried to lure him in. And yet verse 10 tells us, he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. I think that's very important. He didn't even give it an opportunity. Not just to lie with her, but he didn't even find himself present with her. And that is so important. Because young people, if you don't hear anything else tonight, remember this. The mathematics of male and female relationships, time plus opportunity equals trouble. Did you write that down? Time plus opportunity equals trouble. It is the golden rule. He didn't lie with her. He wasn't even with her. And this is so impressive. For I am sure that Joseph was a normal, that means hormonal, teenage boy. He was tempted, no doubt about it. And I'm sure there were times when she caught him when he was tired and he was vulnerable and perhaps even discouraged and deflated. She would lure him to, oh, let me put the wind back in your sails, big boy. And at times, I'm sure he felt like giving in. But Joseph resisted every time. You know, I'm afraid that many believers are virtuous only because of a lack of opportunity. If they were baited day in and day out like Joseph, it wouldn't take long for them to cave in. Guys, godly convictions, personal integrity, moral purity were priorities for Joseph, and they need to be priorities for you and me. Non-negotiables, as we've been talking about on Sunday morning. And let me make one more point. Don't believe it when you hear the lie, well, everybody else is doing it. That's simply not true. Yeah, some are doing it. It could be that many are doing it. It could even be that most are doing it. But not everybody's doing it. Joseph didn't do it. And I know there are still some Josephs today who don't do it. Rather than being like everybody else, be a Christian. Be called to be different. Be committed to Jesus Christ despite what everybody else is doing. Well, finally, after days, after weeks, perhaps even after months of trying to woo Joseph to bed, Mrs. Potiphar sets a trap. Verse 11. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were inside. And I wonder why they weren't there. I'm sure she gave them the afternoon off. She set this up. That she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And I don't want your minds to run off the wrong direction here, but who knows what she was wearing, if anything. when she caught him and when she grabbed his coat. Suddenly, she's alone with Joseph. She grabs him. She starts pulling off his clothes. And Joseph jerks away and he runs for his life. Guys, sometimes temptation can be so strong, so fierce, that the only option for us is to flee. To just run for your life. Leave the premises. Remove yourself logistically from the source of that temptation. This is what Paul tells Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 2. Flee youthful lusts. That's a message that we need to hear. Verse 12. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them saying, see, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to meet a lie with me. And I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. She's the one that said, lie with me. Now she's telling lies about Joseph. I'm sure you've heard the expression, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And a rejected Mrs. Potiphar now becomes vindictive. She claims that Joseph has tried to rape her, and she holds up this coat as proof. If she can't get Joseph, then she's gonna get Joseph. Verse 16. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, this Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came into me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside. And so it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Now, I don't believe he was angry with Joseph. I believe he was angry at his wife. He knew his wife. And I'm sure he suspected her of lying. The problem is that he had no proof. He was angry at her for soiling a good man's reputation, for lying about this man, Joseph. He probably had a whole lot more confidence in Joseph than he did in her. He was angry at her for trying to force him to take action. How do we know that? If Potiphar really believed his wife's charges, he wouldn't have had Joseph thrown into prison. He would have had Joseph executed. Remember, all Joseph was to him was a slave. No, the fact that he had Joseph thrown into prison was proof that he believed he was innocent. I think Potiphar wanted to save Joseph, but at the same time, too, he had no proof, and so he had to save face, and so he had him thrown into prison. Well, verse 20 tells us, then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Notice this, everywhere Joseph goes, God blesses him. He finds favor. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all of the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him. Potiphar trusted him with his household. Now the warden of the prison trusts Joseph with the keeping of the jailhouse. Here's a man of integrity. Here's a man of honesty. It's recognized by everybody he comes in contact with. And whatever he did, notice this again, whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Now we know from piecing several verses together here, that Joseph served Potiphar for a number of years, perhaps as long as a decade. Imagine now Joseph's feelings. He's in prison. A decade of faithful service is now up in smoke. Here he's been faithful to Potiphar, and what does he have to show for it? He's right back in prison. Right back where he started, in essence, a pit. I mean, this is the second time he's been burned. And after another betrayal, after another round of unfair treatment, I'm not so sure if I had been Joseph, I wouldn't have just given up. I probably would have gotten angry with God. I would have become bitter, but Joseph does none of those things. It's amazing. No matter how low this guy goes, he still has the ability to lift up his eyes to God. He still has the ability to have faith. This is a marvelous character. He remains faithful. He remains trustworthy, and he keeps his faith in God no matter what. This morning, Dan walked by, and I said, "Dan, how are you doing today?" And Dan says, "Well, you know how Dan is." He says, "Well, Sandy, I'm doing medium well." And so I don't know why I said it, but I told him, I said, "Well, you know, Dan, Jesus said that he wanted us to be well done, good and faithful servants. And you know, if you're only medium well, he might just throw you back on the fire." Dan got a whole nother sermon without asking for it. But that's what God did with Joseph. Here he is. He throws him right back on the fire. Chapter 40. "It came to pass after these things that the butler..." And understand, the butler was not the guy who, you know, puts the jacket on him and, you know, shines his shoes. The butler was the king's cupbearer, in essence. He was his personal wine taster. "And the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt." And I'm sure when whatever happened, we don't know what happened that offended him, but I'm sure that somebody in the crowd, you know, raised their hand and said, "The butler did it." "And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. And so he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. And so they were in custody for a while." Now, both chief baker and chief butler were strategic posts in a royal court. If the king's enemies, remember, wanted to assassinate him, the easiest method would be to bribe the baker or to bribe the butler. Just have them poison his wine or poison his bread. They could do him in. That meant that the butler and the baker had to be men that the king could trust, important men, loyal men. What these guys did to anger the king, we're not told. Burn a bagel, perhaps. Spill a little wine on the new royal carpet. We're not sure. But it's no accident that they end up locked down in prison on Joseph's watch. Again, though Joseph doesn't recognize it, God's hand is at work. God's providence is once more at work in Joseph's circumstances. Verse 5 tells us, "Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream, both of them. Each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation." One night, two dreams. "And Joseph came into them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. And so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, 'Why do you look so sad today?' And they said to him, 'We have each had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it.' And Joseph said to them, 'Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please.'" Notice Joseph's statement. It's a provocative statement. "Do not interpretations belong to God?" And it's true. God can and does speak to us through dreams. Now, that doesn't mean that every dream is a message from God. As a matter of fact, I believe that dreams come from four sources. They can come from God. They can come from Satan. They can come from our own psyche. And they can come from last night's pizza.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the first book of the Bible, Genesis. You can learn a great deal about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at the website, you'll find today's message and many other messages from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area, or will be visiting anytime soon, you can get directions and times for our worship services. Again, the website for all this information is sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the book of Genesis. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.